Vigilance Press Podcast is proud to announce our new sponsor, Noble Knight Games, on the web at www.noblenightnot.com or in beautiful Janesville, Wisconsin. Aaron, Ian, and the guys at Noble Knight are ready to help you fill all of your gaming needs. Noble Knight carries the latest in role-playing games, miniatures, and board games. Noble Knight also carries the out-of-print and hard-to-find items you thought were lost, that big gaming closet in the sky. They buy, sell, and trade all kinds of games. This week, we're focusing on their incredible selection of miniatures for games of all kinds, military simulation, fantasy role-playing, and, of course, Warhammer and Warhammer 40K. They have thousands of miniatures in stock and lots of the hard-to-find minis that'll make your enemies tremble with fear as you roll across the battlefield. And if you're a fan of collectible miniature games like HeroClix and Mage Knight, well, you're in luck, folks, because at Noble Knight, the out-of-print is available again. That's www.noblenight.com, or if you drop by in person, let them know that Vigilance Press sent you. And if you don't believe me, take the
word.
Hey,
this is Steve Genson, and Noble Knight Games is great. They have always been providing top-notch service and a great place to find those out-of-print games.
That's Noble Knight, www.noblenight.com.
Well, hey, thanks, Dan. This is Mike Lafferty, and welcome to the Vigilance Press Podcast. As you have already sussed out, we've got Dan Houser, our usual co-host here. And
hey,
Dan. And once again, we are graced with the presence of a gaming luminary, Mr. Steve Kenson. How you doing, Steve?
Good, thanks, Mike.
You like it when I call you a luminary?
Yeah, that cracks me up.
Well, no, I mean, you're like almost famous.
Yeah, I would say I'm almost famous. I forget who referred to it as fame with a PH. Pseudo fame.
And if I continue eating all this candy, I'm going to be a voluminary. So.
That's not your best material, Dan. Let's hope pick it up for the rest of the podcast. All right, man.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm the guy who provides dryness and bad one-liners. You're the guy who interjects energy and come on, man.
Yay, energy! Woo!
All right, and hey, back on track. We're here because Steve has got a new book coming out from Adamant Entertainment, The Villainomicon for the Runaway Success Icons.
Yeah, Villainomicon is really the first. I guess what you would call the first supplement for Icons, since all of the other material that's come out for the game thus far has been adventures.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what was the inspiration behind Villainomicon?
Well, Villainomicon is basically, as you might guess from the name, a big collection of bad guys. And one of the most popular kinds of books for superhero games is just big collections of cool bad guys for the heroes to fight. Certainly some of my favorite supplements from superhero games that I've played in the past have been those big, you know, villain books that are just, you know, chock full of ideas where you go through and all like, oh yeah, he's cool. And, oh yeah, I could definitely, you know, have an adventure based around this character. And, you know, they're full of ideas. They're really inspirational and they're just a lot of fun.
Okay, cool. Now I had heard a rumor you're going to be premiering some new rules in this book as well.
Yeah, some stuff. We're not doing a whole lot of rules material in the sense of, you know, a big rules supplement. We're simply adding in a bunch of either little new bits and pieces that go with the particular characters. Like if a villain has a particular variation on a power or a particular way of tweaking the game that works particularly well with that bad guy, we include that. There's a section on how to handle various what we call disasters, basically, which are a variety of different kinds of challenges that aren't villains per se, but if you want to, you know, have the heroes rescuing people from a building fire or dealing with a tidal wave or an earthquake or some other sort of big challenge that isn't necessarily a bad guy they fight, there's a whole section on that sort of stuff in the game. And there's a short section on expanding out the character creation system in Icons by adding an additional villain creation step to it, where as part of character creation, you also, as a group, create at least one set of villains for the heroes you've just created. And that involves a lot of the systems that are very similar to the hero creation stuff, but it's an element of it is basically, well, okay, now pass your hero to the player to your left, and they're going to create your arch enemy for you. Sort of the setup.
Yeah, we actually had a sneak peek of those arch villain roles on the podcast about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Dan was nice enough to come on and do that for us.
And
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. We came up with Dr. Quark's arch nemesis. We also this is just to interject a request from every single person who emails me talking about mm-hmm. icons. They have begged. They're begging for an all-American girl write-up. They want her stats for some reason. If you look at the wiki and at the group, they keep asking for it. And I was like, well, Gareth, can we do that? And he was like, well, let's ask Steve. And so now you're here, so I'm asking you. I bet all the people at home are now doing their little fist pound in the air because they're so happy I asked that question.
Yeah, I bet we could do that. That shouldn't be that
See,
difficult.
We can. I trust my emails, people. We can do it. I just – It'll only be $50 retail. It'll be just All-American Girl and her one arch nemesis.
Passing the hat.
Yep.
We're going to have an embossed holograph cover signed by Steve.
Yes. Oh, yes. Man.
Can you draw holographs, Dan?
I could try. It'll take a little longer than normal.
Yes. You have to draw in extra dimensions.
Oh, man.
That brings us to another
pretty bent time to my will. Certainly the third dimension will be no problem.
Exactly.
I always wonder what happened to Wave Rider from that one big DC crossover, and he became Dan Houser.
Yep. I had to cut my hair, though. That hair was ridiculous. Even though it was made of fire, it was still too much hair.
Yes.
Space Bon Jovi is not cool. Sorry, Dan Juergens. I know you thought Space Bon Jovi would be the best thing ever, but no.
Well, it was the 90s. You know, what did you want?
It's true. It was a different Superboy hair.
It was a different time. I mean, Vanilla Ice had a music career, and it was a different time.
Yes, standards were different.
They were. Hey, speaking of different standards, I understand we've got a pretty awesome cover for the Villainomicon.
We do. We do, as a matter of fact. Dan turned out a really very cool cover that I think made him rethink the Icons cover when he did it because it was so cool.
Actually. Yeah. And well, what I thought of with the Icons cover was, you know, all the heroes rushing off to face some dangerous villain off the panel. So it was essentially saying, you know, this book is the jumping off point and everything else is in your court. But now that we have the Villainomicon, we have all the villains on the cover. I was like, well, wouldn't it be neat if they were all facing the opposite way of the Icons cover? So if people have both books at home, they can put them side by side and go, ooh, neat, they're fighting each other. Because when I was a kid, I would do that kind of thing all the time.
very challenge of the Super Friends.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Still on my lines. Go ahead, sir.
Another idea that I had was to make it a lot like the old Marvel, the Guide to the Marvel Universe, the old comics. Where it would be like John Buscema or like in DC, the Who's Who wasn't necessarily a bunch of people on the cover. It was always just like one or two of the main people inside. But the Marvel ones had them all running towards something. Even the villains were running with them. I never knew what they were running for. Maybe they're late for a bus. I don't know. But
Ice cream.
Yes. That would be awesome. Like the Beyonder in an ice cream truck is at the very end of it.
Don't get between Dr. Doom and some of that.
Fools! Bow before the might of Rocky Road and Moose Tracks. So says Doom.
Exactly. Exactly.
But in terms of the art for Villainomicon, I kind of upgraded the style for Icons just a little bit. I didn't want to stretch too far away from the cartoons. I wanted to look like cartoons. But the Bruce Timm style, while very, very like stylistic. Mm-hmm. And the style from Brave and the Bold is very stylistic and great for telling a very easy message to people visually. I wanted to kind of just up the complexity just a little bit for Villainomicon, which when you see the book, you'll know what I'm talking about right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm guessing you guys are two of the few humans walking the planet who've actually seen this book. You guys have favorites of the villains in there?
That's a good question. It's hard to pick favorites because, you know, it's always like, you know, who's the favorite character you've created kind of thing. I mean, and I like them all in different degrees for different reasons. Let's see, some of the good ones I like. I like the cute little girl vampire character, who has a vampire kitty. She's fun for the, what I always called, I always used to do this to my players in every superhero game I ran, was that sooner or later they would run into some, menace or threat that looked entirely innocent and harmless. And they would swoop in to rescue, you know, such as the, you know, poor little girl whose cat was caught up in a tree, and would do something like swoop in to save, get the kitty down from the tree and then only discover that it was a vampire and it was going to attack them. And they always fell for it every time.
Kind of reminds me of Dexter, the cute kitty who's a red lantern.
Yes. Yes. I'm a big fan of Dexter. And who else is there's a giant alien mind controlling plant. There's the guy who makes origami come to life and turns them into monsters, giant paper creatures to attack people. And the super intelligent cockroach, Professor Kafka. Who Dan definitely had some fun with.
Yes.
Although we had a big back and forth about how many arms and legs he was supposed to have.
Oh yeah, yeah, that
for
was
a while there.
I put too many.
How many legs? How many legs does a cockroach have?
Well, they're insects, so they have six.
Look at the big brain on Steve. Okay.
Look, it's better, as Steve put it, it's better that he points it out to me than every person on RPGNet pointing it out to me.
Yeah, this is true.
Hey, Hauser, what kind of idiot are you? Well, I don't know. I don't draw roaches that live in people's heads all day.
It's okay, all the time.
I draw other things, too, like Sock Puppet, which is my favorite character to have
drawn.
Sock Puppet. He's probably my favorite design, because you're like, just go crazy. I'm like, okay. So he looks pretty crazy, but I just love the way his, like when I was like, well, what says to me sock? Oh, this outfit says he's wearing a big sock.
Yep. Well, I know we've touched on him before, but let's assume our listeners probably don't catch every podcast. Can you describe the evil villain Sock Puppet to our listeners, Dan?
Certainly. Imagine you have an athletic sock that you've grown to cover your entire body as a part of your supervillain outfit.
Sexy. Okay. So,
oh yeah, but only instead of tied at the top, it's just closed. So it's like a onesie for an egg-shaped man who, essentially, he lives in a basement and hates everything like a real sock puppet.
Yep. Except for the fact that he can control your mind.
Yes, with his sock puppet that's on his hand, which is an oversized sock. It looks like a Mean Joe Green football-sized sock with a bunch of yarn for hair.
Okay.
It doesn't brush.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the inspiration for him was, how you can use him in your game, just to try to save this concept, because what we just described in the last.
Wait, you see it? It's awesome.
I was just going to say, what's there not to love? The inspiration for Sock Puppet was actually something that Gareth and I were talking about at one point, and that the expression of referring to, you know, someone's anonymous user ID on an internet forum as a sock puppet came up, and I said, "Hey, that would be a really great name for a supervillain who, you know, was just this, you know, really, really, you know, mean, angry guy." You know, and Gareth was like, "You should totally do that." And I was like, "I will." He was calling my bluff. Like, he was like, "You should really do that." And I'm like, "I will. I'm gonna write it up for Phlenomicon." and so I did. And you know, when it came time to do the art notes for the book, there were a number of characters who had very clear ideas of what I wanted them to look like, and then there were guys like Sock Puppet who I just had no clue, apart from the fact I was like, you know, I told Dan, I was just like, go crazy. He's a bitter guy who lives in his basement, you know, and gets angry at people on the internet all day.
So this is kind of like Gorilla Grodd as internet troll?
So
here,
yeah, in some regards.
Mike, check this out. I'll show you the picture. In fact, I'll even send you a mini copy, if that's okay with you, Steve, to put on the blog spot so I can link to it. and they can actually see what he looks like. So when you see what he looks like, Mike, you're going to
– visual aids.
I advise everyone listening to the podcast, by the way, just click the link now so you can actually look and see what he looks like. Because Steve says to me, bitter basement-dwelling guy. And I go, okay, I have to think of a guy who would be that supervillain who has mental powers. So not necessarily buff or studly. Nope. More like what you see there, Mike.
kind of looks like the dad from Eight Is Enough.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly. Dick Van Patten meets Pubert from Futurama.
Nice.
Tubby. Not overly fat. Not like, wow, he's a real fat guy. Just tubby, you know. Mm-hmm. But yet he still has enough vanity that he wears a skin-tight sock outfit.
This kind of reminds me of a villain from the Teen Titans cartoon from back in the day a few years ago.
Oh, Control Freak.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think they're kindred souls.
Yes, I would. They would either really get along or really, really, really hate each other. Because they would probably get into an argument over something.
I think Gareth asked me, what's in all the little pouches? And I said, Funyuns.
Ho-hos.
Yeah, Chocodile probably. One Chocodile in each one. I've got to cut down on my sweets, or I'll never be able to control their puny little brains. Isn't that right, Sock Puppet? Oh, you're so funny. I'm so funny. I'm going to write that in my blog.
That's a beautiful thing. I like how Dan's got the voices down for when we do the Icons animated series.
Yes. He's all prepared. I always picture Dan doing all the voices while he's drawing these guys.
Do you do that, Dan?
I refuse to comment. Sometimes I do. It depends on what I'm drawing. If I laugh, like, for example, a Sock Puppet, he's one of my favorites because the look on his face is so like, nyah, nyah, nyah. Like, I imagine when people write, like, for example, meh, the word meh online, that's the face they're making.
That's their expression.
They write that word. You know, this is going to burn them so bad.
I've got a friend of mine who runs a particularly flamey gaming forum whose name I won't mention on air, so not to give any traffic. I think he would love this character, though. Probably reminds him of several of his posters.
Very cool.
Yeah, nice. Well, what else is cool about Villainomicon? What else can you tell us about it?
Well, it's a really pretty broad book. It's really wacky, but it's also, you know, casts a pretty wide net. You've got, you know, characters like Sock Puppet. You've got, you know, characters like Tempest Khan, who is this interdimensional warlord. You've got
Gorn.
You know, I'm sorry?
Gorn.
Yeah, you've got Gorn.
Volcano's nemesis, who
warlord
of the multiverse. I very much used Darkseid as my inspiration for.
Yep. So I mean, there's a little something for everybody in there, and it definitely embraces the just range of stuff that you're going to find in a comic book, you know, universe. It's just, you know, very broad. So I mean, if you can't find anything, you know, good for your Icons game, you know, in Villainomicon, you're just not trying.
Absolutely. Also, with each character there, and Steve, to his very large credit, each of them isn't just a character with a nice background, because they are. In addition, they have story hooks, just a few, but the main things that pop into your head won't be these story hooks, but they'll be something that you go, wow, I can really use that, and then bang, you've got a game. And so instead of doing the plot generating thing, you have a plot generated. You could start the game right after people roll up their characters.
Yeah, I mean, just like the characters in the Icons book, the sample villains, all the guys in Villainomicon have at least two or three adventure hooks. So you've also got basically a book of like a couple hundred adventure ideas that you could use.
Now, I know I want to give credit where credit is due. Are you the sole writer on this, Steve, or did some of the other guys from Adamant jump in?
No, Gareth did some of the write-ups for the book as well, and I did a fair number. I think that it's just us, but
I helped.
Well, yes, that's true.
Yeah,
Dan definitely.
I did create Redcap and Rorik,
right?
The designs for Rorik, but Redcap and I also designed Recluse, who's in and came up with the the design and the name of Recluse for the main book.
Recluse is a great character, by the way.
It's actually from a What If or What The comic that I read a long time ago, which was – it was a what's his name?
Peter Parker?
Fred Hembeck.
No.
Mm-hmm. No, no. Fred Hembeck did a series of what would really happen if these things happened to people. Like the Incredible Hulk was the Incredible Skeleton. It was just a skeleton because a guy got hit with a nuclear bomb. And Peter Parker was just in bed really, really sick from getting bit by a radioactive spider. And I was like, what if it went the complete opposite way? Like that same day, the bully of the class got bit by a spider too, but instead of being, oh, I could jump around and I could be really witty and I can shoot webs and all this other stuff, he turns into a giant monstrous spider.
Yep.
He's like, just great.
Recluse definitely like creeps me the hell out in a good way.
Yeah, I think the story that Gareth came up with for him is really good too. It's a very pulp story that's reminiscent of Ezekiel from the Spider-Man comics.
Yep.
Only in the villainous form. So it's kind of like the Wolfman meets Ezekiel, which I really like. I really like that background as well. But that was the idea for the design was, man, what if he had really bad luck and he goes, I'm a giant spider. I love that stuff.
So who's Redcap and Rorik? You just mentioned those guys.
Rorik actually was – I don't think – no, Rorik was Gareth's design. I just simply designed the look of the character. But Redcap was the very first thing I ever drew professionally and got paid for.
Yeah, Redcap he's named for the fairy tale sort of evil elves that dye their caps red in people's blood. But he's basically sort of a crazy Joker type bad guy.
Okay, that's good. Now, who's Rorik?
He's an ice elf from Niflheim. Yep.
Oh, okay. You guys have a lot of mythological themes in this book, it sounds like.
It goes it's broad.
Yeah, exactly. You get a very full range of, stuff. I mean, aliens, mutants, ex-spies, weirdos, mythological beings, time-lost pirates.
Fourth dimensional imps? Who's making
–
do you guys hear that noise? Dan, is that you?
Which noise?
Never mind. Sorry. Someone was trying to do a video call to me on a – on Gmail, and it makes a little noise like an ice cream truck on a stream.
Creating the noise that only Mike can hear.
Sorry, I apologize for that.
Tell your dog that only you can hear that noise.
Just to make him feel bad.
Buster, I told you. Never at work.
So, all right, well, hey, so let's see, what else can we talk about? A Color of Villainomicon.
We do fill out in Villainomicon, too, a few of the sort of background villains. There's a certain amount of that villains that we've mentioned in various spots and icons, usually in, like, examples in the rule books or backgrounds of the characters. We bring a bunch of them in and actually flesh out who they are and that sort of a thing. So you get, Saguaro's arch nemesis, Helix.
Yay! More about Saguaro.
Shows up as the example of villain creation, since we used him as the example of hero creation in the book.
I really want to see a setting book sometimes where you like give us more background on the world of Saguaro, and like Dad mentioned, the stats for Lady America, is that her name?
All-American Girl.
All-American Girl. See, if she had a background, I would know her name. I wouldn't have to ask Dan. As it is right now, she is a cool character concept.
And a concept. That's really all she is.
Right, pretty much. Pretty much. Some people have asked about doing a setting book for icons, but I think in a lot of ways that runs kind of contrary to the nature of the game. I think that one of the cool things about icons is that it has that sort of wacky implied setting to it that you found in a lot of the old school superhero games, that, the very first editions of stuff like Champions and Villains and Vigilantes, and whatnot, where you just have these random collections of characters, basically, who are all based on the idea that pretty much everything you read in the comic books is true. But that was pretty much it. There was no real context to it beyond that. And I kind of always liked that because it implied lots of elements to a whole universe, without necessarily laying them all out for you in sometimes nauseating detail.
Don't get too harsh there, Steve. You're the man who wrote Freedom City.
I include myself in that category. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for a prefab setting that riffs on an interesting idea. But I think that there's also a lot to be said for a sort of anti-setting, if you will, right, that is just sort of implied and leaves a lot of breathing room for people to just make up their own interpretations of things. I remember when I was running my very first superhero RPG, and this is like back in like high school.
So 1978 or so, 1976?
Yeah, you know, the Jurassic period, thereabouts. I would oftentimes I would see a new, you know, superhero adventure or source book or something like that, and I would flip through it, and I remember on at least a couple of occasions just wholesale borrowing a character's name and picture from the book. Of I would just see what the character looked like and what they were called, and I'd be like, oh yeah, that's a cool idea, put the book back. Because I couldn't afford it then anyway. And I would go off on my own and I would just make up that character. And it would be something totally different. And then later on, I'd get the book and I'd be like, oh, I was totally wrong. This character isn't anything like that. But, you know, it was just that all I really needed to get me going was, you know, that sort of little spark of an idea. And I was off making up all sorts of stuff about the world and what that implied and what this guy was like and the whole nine yards. So I kind of like that Icons is more freeform in that regard, and it doesn't necessarily have to nail down all of the details of, you know, who, you know, when All American Girl's first appearance was, and you know, what team she's been a member of, and, you know, how she interacts with the government, and, you know, the whole nine yards of that.
And what's really great, Steve, too, with the characters that you came up with, like Sahuaro and all the stats for Whisper and the Hangman and everything, is that they're really, I mean, beyond their qualities and their challenges, there isn't like Hangman was once, you know, mild-mannered so-and-so, and mm-hmm. there's not really a lot of that. A lot of that's been filled in, like, by people who have picked up and go, hey, I want to see All-American Girl. It's like, all right.
Sure.
You know, it's like, we'll just come up with qualities and challenges, and then there you go. You've got another character for your world.
Yeah. Well, and that was true even during the process of writing Icons, was, you know, Dan and I had a very synergistic working relationship in that, you know, I would just randomly mention a character's name, like Saguaro. And, you know, 10 seconds later, there would be a complete illustration, you know, that would just appear out of nowhere. And, you know, then I would be like, oh, that's really cool. Let me write up a set of stats for him. And, you know, then, you know, so a lot of the sample characters in Icons just came out of that, of I would throw out a name, or Dan would mention, you know, show me an illustration and say, hey, this is, you know, the Creeper, who's a guy who shows up in Villainomicon, who's just started as an illustration in Icons. Yeah. I was like, who's that guy on this page? And he's like, oh, that's the Creeper. And I'm like, awesome, I'm going to write his stats up.
yay! He does look pretty awesome on the cover, I have to admit. Like, that's one of my favorite – like, he went from being kind of a dork in the Icons book. I was like, I'm going to make him a little bit more cool looking.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, so, he's a really smart guy who controls plants. He is kind of a dork, but
– yeah. But now he's got a six-pack and he doesn't look like
– yeah. He's been working
so much of a cabbage head.
All right, nice. You bring up a good point. I think if we were all in the Battlestar Galactica world, just on general principle, would have to kill Dan because he works way too fast to be human. He's clearly a Cylon.
Yeah.
It's possible.
So, Dan, shut up, you fracking toaster. I'm talking. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were saying?
I was just going to say, tell Steve about the turnaround time for the field guide.
Oh, well.
I mean, all the art and layout.
We're doing a setting book. for Icons, written by a guy named Jason Tondro. His drcomics.blogspot.com. And Jason's a brilliant guy who did his master's thesis on superheroes. And he's an amazing writer. I saw this manuscript that Chuck Rice had, and I was like, we have to do this book. And
awesome.
First we're going to do it with clip art, and then Dan saw it, and he was like, no, we're going to draw this one. And I want to say in like 3 or 4 days, Dan had drawn all the characters for the book. Mm-hmm. And then he did the layout pretty much in the last 48 to 50 hours for this book. And it just looks awesome. It's actually going on sale Monday, come to think of it.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. I'm waiting for Dan to reach that point where he gets to the next level where he actually has the art done before you ask for it.
We're back to the time traveler theme with Dan.
Right, right. You know, so it's like, me hey, and that Dan, old lady. Yep. And he's like, here you go.
Again, I was on
the phone with my grandma back in the 20s, and I'm sorry that picture got out, people. Don't be worried, okay? It's just a normal phone call. Roaming charges are a bitch for the 20s, by the way. It was a depression, man, so.
I was hoping you were on walkie-talkies. Yeah. That explained – well, anyway, if you're not aware what Dan's talking about, there was a Charlie Chaplin movie where someone saw a woman in the background who was holding a block of ice up to her chin, and everyone was sure it was a cell phone, that she was a time traveler, except for the fact there were no cell phone towers in 1920, whatever.
That was the immediate logical conclusion.
She must have superpowers.
Yep. I actually ran a great one of the demo games I ran it was a time travel story that ended up putting the heroes in like the Jurassic period or something like that. And I swear one of the players in the game, his immediate first reaction to a problem of having to locate a lost plane in the scenario was GPS. And it literally took 10 minutes for everybody at the table to explain to him that GPS satellites didn't exist yet, and that technology would not in any way work. And it was like his whole world was crumbling. The idea that was even a possibility. That GPS.
Mr. Kenson, why don't these dinosaurs have saddles on them, which is historically accurate, please?
Indeed.
Please, Mr. Kenson, answer that question for me, please. That's actually an Alaska accent for all of you people out there saying that something wrong with the South. Nope. Like David Cross says, every redneck has that accent. And I approve that message.
You know, the hardest part with doing a podcast with Dan is trying to follow him after he says things like that. You're like, all right.
I'm sorry.
Where do I go from Alaskans riding dinosaurs like horses? I got nothing. All right, plunging bravely forward. Hey, the Hero's Handbook from Green Ronin coming out soon, right?
Yes, in the works.
And why don't you tell us all about this, Steve?
The Mutants and Masterminds Hero's Handbook is the relaunch of the Mutants and Masterminds line. It's the first book for the third edition of the game. And folks have basically already gotten a look at the third edition rules in DC Adventures, which uses the same rule set. The M&M Heroes Handbook is basically the rules content from DC Adventures that is obviously done as a standalone superhero game without any of the DC material in it, but examples of various Mutants and Masterminds characters. So it's the rules content from DC Adventures without any of the setting or background material from DC.
Okay. Boy, you're going to hate me for this question. Will any of the errata from DCA be worked into this?
All of it that we can find, yeah.
Okay, okay.
We'll make sure that any errors that we're aware of are going to get corrected in the Heroes Handbook.
Okay. And I know we don't have a firm release date. Are we just thinking before Christmas, maybe early January, or can we even get that narrow it down that much?
All I can tell you right now is that it's in production, which is to say it hasn't gone off to print yet. So I think that it's probably a safe bet that you might see a PDF release before Christmas. I don't know about a print release.
Okay. Will we be seeing any art from our own Dan Houser in there?
I'm not the art guy, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately.
Okay, well, shoot, that was the then question. Okay, well, hey, can you tell us about any other third ed releases, or is it too early to talk about that?
There are a number of things in the works. Only thing I can really tell you about right at the moment is that there is a third edition Game Master's book in the works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a date for you yet, but I know that that's finishing up in development. So it should be following along and is a pretty jam-packed Game Master resource for Mutants and Masterminds or any other superhero game with a lot of material on creating and running villains and creating scenarios and designing your own setting and all of the various things that the Game Master needs to create and run the game.
Okay. And now there's been a lot of speculation on the forums about heroes and villains. The next DCA books.
DC books, yeah.
Yeah. Do we have release dates on those?
I don't have release date information, but pretty much as soon as there's a firm release date, Green Ronin isn't shy about sharing it. So any release information that we are good about is going to show up on the website and work its way through our networks. So anything to say anything before that is speculative because especially for the DC stuff, we're heavily dependent on DC's approval
mm-hmm.
for product. And basically the approval process with DC takes as long as it takes for DC to be done.
Yeah. It's you can't hurry Warner Brothers. I understand. No. Hey, that reminds me. The first footage for Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds.
What?
Yeah, Entertainment Tonight last night, I think, had a brief 15-second segment with Ryan Reynolds from Green Lantern.
Oh yeah,
they had some scenes where he transformed and him using the power ring and him on Oa, and I want to say there was a brief 2-second glimpse of Kilowog there at the end.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah, I'll throw a link up on the website. I'm guessing from your guys' reactions, neither one of you have seen that yet. So
no, unfortunately, no. I haven't yet.
Okay,
I'm gonna go look for it after we're done here.
Yeah, it's. pretty easy to find out there. I was going to ask you your response since I know you're a big Green Lantern fan. So
I am. I'm looking forward to the movie. Right now, any interpretation of a property I like, my attitude is cautious optimism. You know.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I liked Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. I just wasn't. I'm kind of got casting reservations, but I am always going to have those no matter who they cast. So
yeah. Yeah, it's a tough. I got to think it's really tough for an actor being cast as a really really iconic character because that's one of those lose-lose situations where you're just not going to make everybody happy and you're almost inevitably going to piss a bunch of people off.
That's actually why Quentin Tarantino discouraged people from doing comic book licenses. Because he says it's a loser for that very reason. It's hard to make the hardcore fans will be happy, but in trying to please them, you're going to put in so much background information, you're going to alienate newcomers, and
Well, it can be a tough needle to thread.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Christopher Nolan did it twice.
Yep, it's been done.
Opinion. Yeah, it can be done.
Yeah. Well,
they've actually made the movie version of Blade, the version that everyone really, really, really gets into. If they'd ever read the original Blade comics, and be like, well, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
It's like Dracula versus Blackula,
Yep.
And essentially that's what it was meant to be back in the day.
Yeah, of course, it was
70s. Meant to be that 70s Sweet Christmas kind of deal.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys ever – well, there's an interview with who's the guy who played Iron Man? Robert Downey Jr. He was on, I want to say, the Letterman show, and he was talking about working on the first Iron Man movie. And apparently he would take the script every day and go to Jon Favreau's office and just cuss him out. What is this crap? Mm-hmm. And they'd rewrite that day's scenes right there in Favreau's trailer. And,
yeah. He was right.
Yeah.
That
first movie worked out pretty well. So.
Yeah, sure did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, so I guess we're getting to where we need to wrap up. Anything else you want to touch on?
I just want to say that I really appreciate all of the interest that folks have shown in icons, and, you know, I'm glad that, you know, it seems to be, you know, scratching an itch for some people, and that, you know, folks are enjoying it. I hope that they're keeping up with the releases from Adamant and looking forward to Villainomicon. I know that Gareth is hard at work on getting it wrapped up and off to print, so it should be coming pretty soon. And I hope that folks are looking forward to the Mutants and Masterminds stuff that's coming up, because John Lighthouser has been doing a hell of a lot of work getting the third edition out there, and folks have a lot of really cool stuff to look forward to.
Hey, I guess that reminds me. Are there any other supplements we're talking about over and beyond games? I'm sorry, over and above and beyond adventures for Icons after Villainomicon that are in the works and the schedule?
Not right at the moment, but a lot of it, I think, is going to depend on how Villainomicon does, because it's going to be the first really substantial supplement for the game as opposed to a small adventure.
Okay.
And, you know, I also don't want Icons to get too heavily dependent on the supplement mill approach of having lots and lots of additional rules material layered onto it, because I think the game is pretty self-contained, and you know, I'd like to see a lot of its support material stay focused on stuff like adventures and, you know, the really kind of small, easy to digest, easy to use stuff.
I would say that battle scenes, the Vigilance Press stuff, have you seen any of those yet? Those are just
pretty cool.
I'm not going to toot anyone's horn here, Mike, but I will say that that size of adventure, you know, is perfect. Like, that's like, here's the situation, you're in it, now do it.
Well, the way I try to visualize it, and all those books I think are less than 5 to 8 pages, and I think of Icons as an Atari 2600, and a battle scene is just a cartridge you plug into it and you play.
Yeah, pretty much.
No muss, no fuss, just go and have a good time.
Yep.
So, well, hey, just closing, who should do the voice of Kilowog in the Green Lantern movie?
Well, that's probably going to be Dan.
Well, I was going to say
Great Poozer. You know who would be awesome?
Edward James Olmos.
Mekhi Phifer. Like, I've been watching Lie to Me on Netflix, and his voice is awesome.
Wait, did you just say Mekhi Phifer?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, dude from 8 Mile?
That was a girl in 8 Mile, wasn't it? Wasn't that Eminem's girlfriend?
Mekhi Phifer's a guy. You think of Michelle Pfeiffer, dude.
Okay.
Seriously, I think both of them could kick my ass based upon Batman Returns, so I'm not going to try and bug them. This is Mike Lafferty saying that Mekhi Phifer's a woman. Just Mike Lafferty said, Mr. Phifer, I know you listen to this because Vin Diesel role plays, so you must clearly role play. But if you are listening to this, Mekhi Phifer, Mike Lafferty, who lives in where is it again? Denver? In Denver, thinks you're a woman.
Once again, I don't know how to follow up. That's what Dan just said.
Here's a link, dude. Here's a link to the very not a woman Mekhi Phifer.
Okay, thanks, Dan. I appreciate that. Steve,
well, enjoy.
Steve, any closing thoughts?
You're right. Dan's pretty hard to follow.
Yeah, he kind of just finishes, and you're like, yeah, I don't know where to go.
Buy Villainomicon. That's how we finish that up.
Buy Villainomicon. It's coming out. When is it coming out? Monday?
Actually, it should be pretty soon, yeah.
Yep. It goes off to printers this week. Folks who pre-ordered will be getting their PDFs sometime very, very soon. I think that's this week coming up, too. Yeah. I want to say Monday, but I'm not going to put anything on it because I haven't talked to Gareth about when the release actually is this week. I know it is this week, and I know it will be.
Okay,
and everyone who pre-ordered gets a copy.
As we're recording this,
it's open until tomorrow, I think.
As we're recording this, it's about 2 p.m. Mountain Time on November the 13th. So sometime in the next couple weeks or so, we're going to see the PDF releases.
Yeah.
Probably a solid guess.
Definitely before Thanksgiving.
Okay, that works. That's within 2 weeks, so sounds like a plan. All right. Hey, Steve, thanks again for showing up.
My pleasure.
Always appreciate you being here. Dan, always appreciate you having you here, too.
Mekhi Phifer on a dinosaur with a saddle.
And until next time,
ah!
Stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant. Peace out.